Father, use me as an instrument of your mercy and your peace that I may help someone in the room today. And by doing so, help myself to stay sober another day. Amen. I'm an alcoholic and my name's Walt. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous is probably the most wonderful thing I've ever experienced in my life. But yet, before I got here to Alcoholics Anonymous, it wasn't the most wonderful thing to me. You know, last week we talked about step one and we talked about the steps before the steps and that you had to want what we have and be willing to go to any length to get it, to take certain steps, and that the reason I'm an alcoholic and the reason I'm powerless is that because every time I quit the thing that I loved the most and said I was never going to drink again, somehow there was a weird mental twist in my brain that told me my answer was to take another drink at some point. I couldn't stay away from the first drink. You see, every single time I quit sober, I picked up another drink. And that makes me an alcoholic. Heavy drinkers, that doesn't happen to. They have choice whether they drink or not. I have no choice whether I drink. Without Alcoholics Anonymous, I will drink every single time at some point. I've proven that time and time and time again for me. Now, that's insane. Okay? That's insane. Normal people, when they say they're not going to drink orange pop anymore, they just don't drink orange pop anymore. I say I'm not going to drink alcohol, and 5 minutes later I'm drinking alcohol again. That's insane. My sponsor used to tell me that the definition of alcoholism is that you're head and your heart were disconnected. They couldn't communicate. And to me, it's very important to understand the fact that for many years when I was drinking, I wanted to disconnect myself from my soul. And I tried to take humanity out of my body. And I really did. I mean, as things got worse in my drinking, the insanity of the violence got so bad that the only way I could live, I never was brought up to be that kind of person. You know, I was brought up in a nice IBM family. You know, my dad wore white shirts and black ties and blue suits to work every day. And so as the violence got worse, the insanity got worse, I had to desensitize my soul. And the further and further I went, the more disconnected I got. But I never became like some of those people that I knew that weren't insane. They were just amoral. They didn't feel bad when they did bad things. And there's a difference between being amoral and being insane. Now in the step two, when it says that we can be restored to sanity, there's a lot of different ways people look at sanity at this point, but to me, it's the insanity of the first drink. Because if I look at the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and I read the foreword to the first edition, that first paragraph is probably the most important thing that Bill ever wrote. Okay, in my opinion. In the first line that says, "We are 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body," was the definition of what Alcoholics Anonymous has. Is we have an answer for people with a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. You know, this morning I was pondering a phone call I got last night. And it was from a family member And this family member's one of the only other family members besides myself that have what we have. And she's never got a chance to be with us. And to watch the insanity of what's going on in her life right now, it breaks my heart. Because here I sit and told her, you can come and stay with me anytime you want. I'll take care of you, don't worry about it. But yet, she's sleeping in a place where she shouldn't be and hiding under a bed to sleep at night. And think that's better than coming to a sober environment. You want to talk about insanity? That's insanity. I understand that insanity. And if you're an alcoholic, you probably understand it too. And as I talked to her mother this morning, and I said, you know, you got to understand that there's still a giggle out there somewhere she's chasing. Because my sponsor told me if there's a giggle in the bottle, we're going to go get it no matter how crazy it is. That was my life for 8 years. I'd get sober for a few minutes, a few days, a few weeks, a couple years, and there'd be something out there that I'd want. You know, I'll never forget this one time I was sober. Well, I wasn't sober. I was drinking at the time, but I wasn't doing all the drugs, okay? I was the opposite of California sober, okay? Now, and I met this girl and she did cocaine and you know, I hadn't done that stuff in a year or so, and I'm like, man, I can't do that. I know better. But I wanted what she had, you know? Oh, that started a bad bender. The insanity of knowing what was coming down the tracks, of knowing everything that was going to happen, of knowing that as soon as I took that cocaine that night, that I was going to give the keys to my beach house away, the keys to my Cadillac away, I was going to give all my money away, and I was going to have to do things that I never wanted to do. Wow. What a sane way to live. Seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Seemingly hopeless, insanity. You see, for me, the way I lived out there had no resemblance of a sane life. I reacted differently in life than I do today. I'm a different person today. The whole way I reacted out of life was based in fear. There was no based out of love. And when a human being is always running out of fear, they need a fourth step. But see, coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, coming in and out and 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 in and out, left me in a place that said AA didn't work for me. Because I didn't find the message here. I didn't find the answer I needed. There were still giggles in the bottle for me. There was still a thrill on the streets. And I'm going to tell you, if you got a giggle in the bottle, you're going to go get it. It's just that simple. I've been around a long time. I've seen it happen too many times. So, then once I got sober, this time, to try to live in a world that I didn't understand because I didn't know what polite society was about. I knew the bars and I know the dope houses real well. I know the rules there. I know how to operate there. But you put me at a nice table with polite people. I don't know what to say. I don't know what fork to use. You know? It's uncomfortable. Sober's not comfortable to me because everything is different. And you see, that's why I always say that that I didn't like sober. And I don't like sober today without AA. You see, I don't like sober today without AA. Wow. That's a pretty powerful statement. And I say that because when I got, I would do stuff to keep drinking that was flat crazy and still think drinking was better than being sober. You see? I was willing to pay any price for alcohol. But sober looked so bleak because every time I'd sober up, the world was so bad around me I couldn't stand it. I had to get high just to feel okay. And everybody's saying sober's great. To me, sober was terrible. It was not. It was so, I couldn't stand it. Insane. Insane. An inability to understand the truth. You see? For me to drink the way I did and for me to put the chemicals in my body I put in there, I had to be insane. Because in my right mind, I would have never done that. Today, I would have never done that. It's not the way I would have believed that I would have wanted to live. But yet, every time my life got worse, I just changed friends. See, none of you else done that either, huh? God. I always had to find somebody worse than me so I felt okay. So I get sober and I'm doing this sober thing, and yet the insanity of this sobriety to me was that I didn't know these rules, and I was full of fear, and I didn't know I was full of fear, and I didn't know that I was living the way I was living at that point, and I was angry at everything, and I was only angry because I was full of fear, and that was a way to keep you away from me. And so really the second step that came to believe that God could restore me to some sanity was I had to stick around AA a while. And I had to see some other people start to get a little better. And I had to understand that if it worked for you, it might work for me. Now that took a little bit of time for me because a lot of my stuff in Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been taught to listen with my eyes. I don't listen with my ears. Because I can hear a lot of crap in AA. But I sit here and watch people, and you'll see. Try it. Watch when a new guy comes in the room and stands up and says they're new. And watch who goes and talks to him. Watch who walks right past him. Watch who avoids him and leaves. You'll see what kind of program they actually have. You see, my sponsor told me the only purpose that we come to an AA meeting is for the new person. Most of Alcoholics Anonymous happens before and after the meetings. Imagine that. If the purpose is to come here for the new people, and you avoid the new people, why do you come here for the friendships and the fellowships? Is this a social club now? I know it's called a fellowship, but, you know, I think we've got a purpose that's a little more important than playing grab ass around the coffee pot. But unfortunately, people forget that in Alcoholics Anonymous. They forget what this insanity was. They forget the devastation when they walked through the doors and didn't know the rules here. You see? All of us have seen that new person walk in. You can tell them in a second. Their eyes are this big. They're looking around. They're a little shaky. They don't know where the coffee pot is. Man. To have the courage to walk into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous after living that type of a lifestyle and to feel so disgusted inside and to have that insanity in your mind. And to come in here and see you good people that have showered that day and actually washed their clothes and maybe had a haircut in the same month. It's overwhelming. It's overwhelming. And that's why I make all my new guys, if they got a week, they're talking to new guys. Because that new guy who just walked through the door can believe that new guy's got a week a lot better than he can believe I got 37 years. It's very important. And you know how good it makes my new guys feel when they take that guy and show him the coffee pot in the bathrooms and sit next to him and give him the phone number at the end of the meeting, and they go home that night and they call me and say, "My God, I feel great. I feel great. I was just drunk a week ago, but I feel great right now." That's Alcoholics Anonymous. That's God relieving the insanity. Wow. I was always taught the real medicine here is one drunk working with another. And that's where we can really help each other. You know, Chapter 3 says there's no mental defense to this thing. And that the insanity will come back to us. And that if we aren't doing our daily spiritual maintenance to get our daily spiritual reprieve, that we could be in trouble at that point. Because only our relationship with God will keep us sober. Because we can't think our way out of this disease. Again, insanity. The insanity is to think we can think our way out of this disease. To think we know something. I don't know about you, but I tried to quit an awful lot of times on my own and it didn't work until the great men and women of Alcoholics Anonymous taught me how to stay sober. They taught me how to bend my knees and get to God. I'll be forever grateful. So as I came to believe, as I watched you and saw some of you get better, and some of you doing things that I couldn't believe you were doing, I started to believe that Alcoholics Anonymous could work. And then maybe God could fix me. Maybe I could find a way where I could stay sober more than a short period of time. Maybe. And you know, to me, that's the second step. Is the sanity that maybe God could help me. Maybe my thinking, the way it is, the way it's been, with all my best efforts, with all my good trials, with everything I could do, ending me up drunk every time. Maybe God could help me. Now, I'm not saying I believed in God. I'm not saying I love God. I'm not saying anything about God at this point, except for maybe. Since He helped you, He might help me. Maybe. You know, and then once you get there, at that point, we're kind of to the point of saying, well, if there is a God, then what am I going to do about it? And that was a rough one for me because I wasn't brought up in the church. I wasn't understanding much of God, except for I had kind of a concept of God a little bit, but not really. And I think in some ways that was an advantage for me in the long run. Welcome. So, when you start looking at how it works in the book, it's kind of interesting because right after it's how it works, it says, believing we're at step 3. Meaning you're not really, but you think you are. You see? Because in how it works, they use some super language. I mean, it's unbelievable. Because the whole book changes when you get to page 58 in the book. You see, before page 58, everything's suggested, everything's flowers and roses and wonderful, and this is how you are. And on 58, the verbiage changes. And they start using much more concrete verbs. Like the first word and how it works, that was maybe one of the biggest fought over words in the big book of the original manuscript, when it said, never had we seen a person fail. And I kind of like it, because I've never seen somebody come to Alcoholics Anonymous that's done everything we've asked them to do and get drunk. Never seen it happen. I believe Alcoholics Anonymous works 100% of the time, as long as you do it the way the black part of the big book says. You see, I believe in that beyond a shadow of a doubt. I've staked my life on it. So it starts with, you know, rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our path. It doesn't say anything about halfway followed our path. You know, another thing, I always talk about this forward to the first edition. I got to tell you, there's one more line in there that I really liked. And it says, this book is to show other alcoholics precisely, and it's in italics, precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. You see, in Alcoholics Anonymous, you hear a lot of myths. You hear a lot of legends. They get a lot of people drunk. You hear, geez, take what you want and leave the rest. I don't know where precisely one way to do it is. Geez, I can work my program and you work yours. Doesn't say that in the book. You see, in Alcoholics Anonymous, there's precisely one way to stay sober. There's one way, the 12 steps. It's all we have. And the only text we have is the big book. And it's only 164 pages, imagine that. I've studied those 164 pages for over 30 years. And they still say different things to me all the time. You see, I believe that's why it's a spiritual writing to me. Because I truly believe that there's no way a stockbroker and a proctologist could get together and write this book. I truly believe it's a God-inspired writing, just like any of the other great God-inspired writings of our time. You see, and to me, that means it's very important. And when I see italics written in the big book, that means I better pay attention. You see? And if you don't know what italics is, it's those little squiggly letters, you know, the funny ones. That means listen. You see? It goes on to say things like, if you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. I never balked at all. You know, in the third step, coming to believe in God. Oh my Lord. Now it was enough just not drinking and all of that emotional stuff inside of me, but yet now I've got to turn this thing over to a God, and I don't understand God, and I surely don't think God likes me because of the things I'd done. I mean, I'd done a lot of things that weren't good. You know, not that my sins were any worse than anyone else's, because they weren't, but they felt different. You see, they felt different, and it kept me from God a little bit because I was embarrassed. And I didn't know that at the time, but that's the way I acted. Thought we could find an easier, softer way. An easier, softer way than God. I mean, how many times did I get drunk over that one? You know? There was a time I thought, man, if I just found the right woman, I'd stay sober. That was wonderful. How many times did I get drunk over that one? My sponsor used to say, yep, there's a slip under every skirt. You see? I proved them right. with all the earnestness at our command. Those are pretty powerful words. We beg of you to be fearless and thorough. We beg of you. I mean, that's a different way than the earlier in the book. You know? That's not a suggestion. That's saying, man, we know you're going to die if you don't do this. And I'm hearing this message, but I'm not knowing what to do. You know, some of us tried to hold on to our old ideals, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. I mean, it's funny now that I sponsor a bunch of guys. It's like, you know, when I got sober, I moved from Fort Lauderdale to Ohio, and I knew no one here. And I think that was the only way I could have ever got sober, because I think if I had any kind of distraction, that it wouldn't have worked for me. And because I wouldn't have done what I had to do here. I wouldn't have gone to all the meetings. I wouldn't have stayed focused on the point. I wouldn't have understood that I had to be dedicated and disciplined in a sober life. That I wouldn't have understood the power and the need of God calling me in my soul. You see, and that was one of the most important things in my early sobriety, is that my insides hurt all the time. I was embarrassed of who I was all the time. And I had this pain inside of me from the things I'd done, and the violence and the drugs and the selling drugs to people, and you know, all of this pain in my soul. And there was nowhere for me to fix it. The only answer I ever had in my life to that pain was to take a drink. That would fix me. That would stop this thing from going. I don't want to drink no more. I don't want to drink no more, but I'm in pain every single day sober. I don't like sober. It's hard. I mean, stupid things. Like, they put me in the halfway house in Ashtabula, okay? And it's December by this point. And the first day I'm there, they say, okay, here's all you got to do. Go out and put the flag up, and at night take it down. That's your chore. And I'm like, cool. Everybody else is like mopping floors and doing dishes and cooking and doing all that. Great, I got to put up the flag. First day, I get up and I get that flag and I go out to that flagpole. There'd been an ice storm the night before. Now, I'm from Florida and I don't know nothing about ice. Okay? And I'm out there for like a half an hour with it holding it in my hands. I'm blowing on it. I'm trying to get this flag up. I come back in, and all day long, all I hear at the halfway house is people busting my... Just saying, you know, oh, you can't even put up a flag, can you? How good are you? Ba, 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 ba. I mean, just all day long. But you know, the next morning I get up to go put that flag up, and there's another ice storm. And one of the guys gets up and says, come on, let me show you something. And he takes me out to the pole, and he says, this is how you do it. And he takes that little clasp and he bangs it against the pole, and all the ice falls off. You see, that's the essence of Alcoholics Anonymous for me, is it's one drunk showing another drunk how to do this thing. You see, I didn't know what to do. He showed me the easier way. Boy, that made sense to me. You know, and that's one of the greatest stories I can tell in Alcoholics Anonymous, is that one drunk helps another. One drunk helps another. And I think that's why I have so much problem with Zoom meetings. Because to me, I can't get the interaction, the eyeball, the devastation of that drunk sitting in front of me. And I can't feel their hopelessness. And I need that. I need to be talking to a new guy who's hopeless all the time. I have to remember who I am. Life's given me a lot sober. Life's given me a lot. I got to remember who I am. I have to stay humble. You see, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous with the upgrade, the black garbage bag. I didn't have luggage when I got in that plane in Florida. Okay? You know, tonight, I'm going to go home and I'm going to drive a car that's going to run all the way to get me home. And I'm going to have a key and it's going to fit in the lock and I'm going to be able to open that door. And I live in a 6,000 square foot, 6-bedroom, 7-bathroom home. I'm a homeless drunk. You see, God has given me a lot in sobriety. I have to be humble. So you read how it works. And it tells us we need to abandon ourselves to God. It says half measures avail us nothing. It says we stood at a turning point. Those are all powerful statements individually, but put together, they create miracles. You see, at the end of this whole thing, it says, being convinced we were at step three. You see? Then it goes on to talk about a guy like me that for a long time I said, geez, if everything would just fall my way, I'd be okay. If I could only put you and make you do what you wanted, I'd be okay. It was always everything around me's fault. It was never my fault. I always wanted to run the show and I wasn't a good director. I screwed things up all the time. You didn't want me running your life. Believe me, I couldn't even run my own. And you know, for me, the third step's pretty simple. Because you hear a lot of stories like, oh, there was three frogs on the log and one decided to jump off. How many were on the log? Well, there's still three because one only decided they didn't jump. I understand all of that. But to me, the third step was just like a knock on the door and saying, you know what, God, maybe we can work on this together. Maybe there's a chance. Maybe. Just maybe. I don't believe in you. I don't believe in God. But you know what? I'm going to these meetings and these men and women that are sober a long time are standing in front of me and they're powerful examples to me. These are men and women that have what I want. You see, I want AA now. I want it bad. And these people are telling me the only way they stay sober is through grace of God. Wow. So I got to find the way to get through this so that I can find the grace of God in my life. Now it's funny because I did what most people do at this time. And you're probably not like me, but my sponsor became my higher power. Imagine that. And I didn't think that. If you would have asked me, then I would have told you were wrong. But see, Alcoholics Anonymous is a journey. And as I go through time and said, you know, yeah, I want to have a God and I want to have something. When I said a prayer, I didn't know how to listen at this point because I could say the prayers, but I didn't understand God. But yet when I talked to my sponsor, I'd feel better when I hung up the phone. And somehow, that feeling better was what I needed at that moment. Because I didn't understand how to listen for God. Because I didn't understand God. I've been through a lot of versions of God in my life. And it's been this evolution of understanding, and I think that's the way it's kind of supposed to be, is that as we grow and get closer to God, our concept of God becomes refined. And sometimes there's moments in our sobriety that are dramatic, and there's total realignment of our thinking. And miracles happen in our lives, and God changes us in a second. I believe it. It's happened to me on numerous occasions. Because, like, this coming to believe that this power can do this for us is developing this want to stay sober and understanding that the men and women ahead of us told us that they use this to stay sober. And you have to build this trust with the people we sponsor. The new guy has to trust that the way that we're laying down in front of them is the way out of their pit of hell. We have to lay it down. We have to give them this image of what do we have they want. We have a lot they want. But we have to present it the right way. We're obligated, especially right now with the state of Alcoholics Anonymous being so tough. It's damaged. The last couple years has damaged AA. And it's each one of our responsibilities to make sure that we're going to that extra meeting. We're talking to that new person. We're trying to rebuild this fellowship and save these people that have gone through such mental anguish during COVID and that are so desperate in their addiction at this point and so alone. So this coming to understand that I want to have God in my life has happened a few times in my sobriety on different levels. So when I got sober, I told you my sponsor kind of became my higher power, which was true. And at about 5 years of sobriety, I'd been praying and going to all the things and doing everything I'm supposed to do and reading all kinds of spiritual books. But I got to tell you, every time I pick up that phone, my sponsor made me feel better. Stopped this thing from running as hard. I remember calling my sponsor. I had this little part-time job one time. I was making salads for lunchtime, making $4 an hour under the table early in my sobriety. I hated the job. I remember calling my sponsor one day and saying, I'm going to kill everybody in this restaurant. You see, insanity. But I didn't. After talking to my sponsor for 5 minutes, I hung up the phone and finished the shift. That's a higher power to me. You see? But it's not the God we need for long-term sobriety. Because guess what? At 5 years sober, I get woken up at 5 a.m. with a knock at my front door. And I open the door and it's 4 of my best friends in the world. And they told me that my sponsor and her husband had been murdered that night in their sleep. You see. She was setting up a treatment center out here in Girard and she was murdered. It brought a big rift between me and God. And you know, for a year and a half, I walked around this program knowing that if I didn't have God and I didn't fix this somehow, I was going to drink. Because I believed what AA said. That if I didn't have God's grace, I would drink. Because I know I'm a real alcoholic. I know I am. And man, I sought out so many answers. I mean, whether it was Father Ritz down at St. Malachi or Father John Paul at Loyola University or many other priests and spiritual gurus. And none of it made sense to me. And finally, I'm sitting in a meeting one night and this lady across the table said, you know, your sponsor died a hero. Your sponsor died serving God. And for some reason it made sense. You know, in about 3 months, I'll have as much time as my sponsor had. I never dreamed it would happen. And so now, all of a sudden, again, I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Because I was insane at this point. Sober. And so as I went to God again, I needed to find a new God and a new relationship with God. A God that I could see, feel, touch, and smell. A God that was real to me. And I started to develop a new way of thinking about God. And I started to find out that in my soul is where God lives for me. And that when I do things that violate the way God wants me to live, I feel uncomfortable in my soul. And the more I can become sensitive as a man to that, the better of a man I am. Because I'll know when that pain is there, that that's God calling me to get closer to that. You see, I want that. You see, I can understand that. Okay? I can understand that. And I started to develop that belief within me and started to live by it and it started to work. And I started this relationship with God that I wanted more and I built up this trust in God. But you see, as God started to give me the gifts of the world, I got an education, and I got a wife, and a couple of kids, and a house, and a car payment, and a job. And God gave me all these things. I know it. And I started to believe in God. And at some point, though, I crossed a place where I lost some perspective of what God was to me. And there were other things that became much more important, like money and prestige and being impressive in my lifestyle and travel and everything else. And if you would have asked me at the time, I would have never told you that. But looking back on hindsight, I really believe that. And so as I moved away from God again, what happens if you move away from God, right? You're going to get in pain. Well, as all that happened, life happens. And see, for me, life doesn't happen easy ever. Never. Because in 08, my wife passed away from lung cancer after knowing for 90 days and left me raising two children. My company I'd built. And the importance wasn't God and AA at that point in my life. And because of that, I got in a lot of pain when my wife died. And within the next few months, both my mom and dad died within 30 days of each other. And for four generations, my parents had, both grandparents and parents had died within 30 days. My wife was a marathon runner. And I weighed 400 pounds and was totally out of shape, and everybody thought I was going to die early. And so did I at that point. And insanity set back in. Let's talk about the second step. You see? Because I was fine. I had a great company. I had a nice house. I had two great kids. I had plenty of friends. And what happens when an alcoholic gets in pain? Insanity sets in. And I pushed everybody away. Because I was afraid. And I didn't want you to see me hurt. For over 3 years, I didn't leave my house. I sold my companies, I raised my boys, and that's about what I did. And then my boys went away to college. And it got real bad. And you know, for some reason, I believed that the doctors had my answer at this point, and I didn't go to God. And the further we get away from God, the more pain we get into. And guess what happened? There came a day 3 years ago where enough was enough. And I said, you know, either God can restore me to sanity or He can't. That's because the doctors couldn't. And I went to the hospital and got off all their stuff. And from that day to this, I have done nothing but believed in God and prayed and spent my time developing a brand new relationship with God. And this God that's such a wonderful thing for me. So, today, I want what God has, you see. And I spend a lot of time trying to stay sane. And to me, sanity means being in touch with your soul. And if I can live by the values in my soul, I'll be a judge that I'm sane. And so, when I look at step 2 and 3 for me today, is that I want to be sane. I want to have an ability to let God run my life. And I want God to do that because my life's better when God runs my life. The one thing I know is that when I start running my life, I mess everything up. I don't do a very good job of it, you know. And if you looked at me from the outside, you can say, boy, I came from Ohio as a homeless guy, no education, 27 years old, not much prospects. And yet, Alcoholics Anonymous and God restored me to sanity, gave me some hope in the future, and allowed me to believe that I could be sane enough to have a regular life. I went to college and got my 4-year degree. I got married and had a family. Heck, at 40 years old, I started a company. I walk away from a 6-figure job to start a company with $300 and a laser printer, right? Insanity. How dare I think that I could do that in today's world? You know, we sold over $50 million the next 10 years. It was unbelievable what God can do. The best part of that story, though, was there's a company called Ernst & Young. And they're the largest accounting firm in the world. And every year they run a program called the Entrepreneur of the Year. Now, this is a pretty cool program. It's one that Michael Dell won, that Bill Gates won. It's pretty impressive. Now, my dad had a high school degree and became a senior design engineer on the PC with IBM. Very impressive man. Not an alcoholic. Just a good man. He got to sit in the front row when I stood on a stage at Ernst & Young with 20 other people on that stage. And I was runner-up for that award because of you. And because God gave me some insight, and I trusted him. How much do I owe for that? You people have given me more than I could ever want, ever ask for. You know, surely driving, 60 miles out here tonight to lead, that isn't enough. I don't know what enough is. But see, in Alcoholics Anonymous, I owe so much to God and owe so much to you people that I could never give back what I owe. I could never. And it's funny because the more I do for God, the more He gives me and the more I get. And oh God, it's crazy. I read this book real early in my sobriety. It was called The Man Who Tried to Get Even with God. And it was a book about this cowboy who was out in the range. And he wanted to learn about God, and somebody told him that The way to learn about God is to do something for somebody else. And he said he thought the guy was crazy. He said, just try it. Well, he helped this guy break a horse. And the next day, he finds a horse running wild. And see, now that he found the horse, he feels like he owes God something more. And so he has to do something more. And guess what? God does something else for him, and it's a vicious cycle. And that's the way my life's been. You know, my life's been beyond my wildest dreams. I've had so much tragedy, don't get me wrong. But the good parts are so good of my life. You know, in my sobriety, I've gone to places because of God that I never thought I would go. I mean, just being asked to lead at a legacy meeting, I never thought I'd have that honor. To me, it's an honor. It's a privilege to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's why I still go a lot. I still go 5-6 meetings a week. You know, my schedule's pretty crazy nowadays. I lift weights twice a day, and I do cardio in the pool for an hour every day. I've lost 140 pounds in the last 2 years. You see, anything you want to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, you can do. The steps teach us how to do all these things. We can use the 12 steps on every individual issue, problem we have in our life. I have never found a problem that I needed outside help for. You see, the 12 steps have been a complete thing for me, for every problem I've ever had. And I've gone to outside help, don't get me wrong, but I've not found as much value as I have here in 12 steps and talking to drunks. You see? I love AA. And I love God. And I love the fact that today I can talk about the fact I love God. You know? I guess I'm pretty much done. So,
thank you, Walt. I think we're out of time. We appreciate hearing you speak on steps 2 and 3 tonight. Of course, you'll be back next week. Is it just step 4 next week?
4 and 5.
4 and 5, okay. Oh, tomorrow.
Sorry.
I've deciphered this. Tomorrow is AA's 87th anniversary. Tomorrow, June 10th. From its humble beginnings back in 1935. Quite the program. What's going on here? Do we have any other announcements from membership? If there are no other announcements, if you're here in the rooms, you can certainly stick around for a few minutes if you like. Help us get things cleaned up and sanitized. But we close this meeting with the Serenity Prayer.